Thank you, Avril. And as time is moving fast, I'm first going to tell you what I'm not going to talk about. The first point is I started my paper that you find on the web by talking about the recent debate about the transformation of the Roman world, which has become quite controversial once again, because some have argued instead of transformation, we need to go back to the old paradigm of a fall of Rome. And what I found disappointing about this discussion was exactly as Avril just said, that it once again concentrated on the West. I think you can only successfully make the point that it's actually the barbarians who destroy Rome if you forget about the rest of the Roman world. And the second thing I'm not going to talk about, although I'm very tempted to, are general remarks about what we mean when we say ethnic identity. Martin Barrett has already made a few general points here. I'm in the process of editing a volume of studies on ethnicity in the early Middle Ages, and I found it useful to write a general introduction asking myself, what do we mean by ethnic identities, national identities, all these very powerful terms? And I ended up writing a 50-page introduction, which got rather abstract, so I'm not going to use that on you. But of course, that is the point that might come up again in the discussion. So the three points I'm going to make here is, first, some general remarks about what the distant past, in my case, the early Middle Ages, can tell you about questions of identity and difference. What can we learn from the period? The second point is that I'm going to talk about my idea of visions of community and general thoughts about the way they changed in the period. And the third is going to be a couple of remarks on the importance of comparative research. So first point, why the early Middle Ages? And if I say early Middle Ages, this is quite a flexible chronological concept, roughly 400 to 1000. So a couple of people would argue that late antiquity actually overlaps with that, and I'm perfectly happy with that. Now, the period has a thoroughly bad reputation and is often called Dark Ages or styled as archaic. Of course, I wouldn't exactly claim that it was an age of enlightenment, but I wouldn't call it a dark age either. Simply to refer to the example of the schisms in the early church. Whenever I try to teach my students about the Christological debates in late antiquity and the early Middle Ages, I actually find that it's a very sophisticated argument, and I'm not sure whether I have properly understood the Chalcedonian Creed with regard to the two natures in Christ and myself very well. I don't think that we should call the Byzantine, the early and middle Byzantine period a dark age, but neither what I call Western societies that have produced an Isidore of Seville or a Venerable Bede, Dark Age societies. And I'm going to make one more point here, which I have called successful identity politics of the period in my paper. I don't say this because many modern nations in Europe claim their origins back in the period. So for instance, a couple of years ago, the baptism of Clovis, the first Frankish monarch, was celebrated as representing the 1500th anniversary of the origin of the modern French state, again under controversial debates. But that's not what I'm talking about so much. It is about creating resources for identification. So the Christian Empire is one of these examples or types of Christian community, for instance, monasteries or other forms of church organization. Roman law, which comes from the 5th, 6th century, Theodosius or Justinian helped putting it together, my specific topic, ethnic identities. So not only existing peoples are looking back to those periods for their origins, but also disappeared ones, Huns, Burgundians, Goths, Vandals, all these peoples disappeared a long, long time ago, but they're still somehow in the agenda. And in European history, many modern nations or other social groups looked back to these peoples for the fundamentals of their identity. So for instance, two of the three crowns of the Swedish coat of arms are supposed to be the crowns of the Goths and the Vandals. So this creates, this period creates strong resources for identification, also for differentiation. I would want to add to what Martin Barrett said about salience. So salience is not only in individuals, it's not only in groups right now, but there is a long-term historical perspective of salience of ethnic identity, which might not matter very much for a long time, and then suddenly they pop up again, and here they are. So what I'm essentially looking at, and this is going to the second point, is the complicated genealogy of modern nations, and I would argue that this period was very important in shaping that. Visions of community, what do I mean by that? Early medieval societies are basically very strongly local and regional. Feelings of belonging are located in face-to-face groups, in cities, villages, small regions. Distances are large. In the Roman world, these small communities were strongly integrated by, among others, trade links or by aristocrats owning things here and there all over the empire, but some of that lost in significance in the process of the transformation of the Roman world. But still, what is striking about the early Middle Ages is that large-scale politics survived. Now, not only the Byzantine Empire or the Caliphate in the east, but also, for instance, the Frankish kingdom in the west really integrated huge polities. These states needed powerful visions of community, establishing identities to draw them together, which automatically also meant, of course, powerful visions of difference. Now we get two different types of visions of community in the period. One is the universal vision. Rome, of course, claimed to a universal vision, but it is interesting to observe the process in which, on a pragmatic level at least, in the course of the Byzantine history, one has to acknowledge that perhaps one is more particular than one would like to be. And then, of course, the universal vision that Christianity, but also Islam, establish. On the other hand, there are particular visions of community which are ethnic or regional. I don't need to say very much about that. What I'm specifically interested in my research at the moment is the way in which these forms of community or these discourses of community and identity interact. Even more specifically, the way in which Christian and ethnic identities interact. Of course, there is also an interaction between imperial and Christian identities, which is very important for Byzantine history. So we get Christianity and the rhetoric of empire, to quote a title of one of Averill Cameron's books. What I'm specifically interested in, because that is rather under-researched, is the relationship between Christian and ethnic identities. The present Pope, as a young theologian, Ratzinger, in the early 60s, published a book called the Unity of Nations, a vision by the Church Fathers, underlining how universal this Christian notion of identity really was. But that is, of course, very true. But on the other hand, we need to acknowledge how Christianity is also a perfect, or provides perfect models for ethnic identity. The Old Testament offers a rich repertoire of figures of identification for ethnic communities, and also the New Testament, by telling the apostles that they should go out and teach all nations, actually make these nations the theater of salvation. So they are part of the divine plan of salvation. Now, these different forms and visions of community interact, and typically they do not create simple and clear-cut identities. I think that is the important difference to the older view that we have to embrace. Let me take the simple example of the Byzantines, the medieval Greeks, about which Paolo Odorico is going to talk in a minute. Now, we call them Byzantines. They did not call themselves Byzantines. We call them Greeks. They did not call themselves Greeks. Greek was almost exclusively in the period an outward description. They might have called themselves Hellenes, which they did in most of the history, but that was a term that had, in a way, fallen out of use in the early Middle Ages because it came to be associated with pagans. So they called themselves Romaioi, Romans, which of course then again created the difficulty of distinguishing themselves from other Romans. So Romanes, after the end of the unity of the empire, had become a very dynamic category which could have imperial, political, ethnic, civic, and even religious meanings. So it's very complex there. So it is a very complicated genealogy of identity that we have here. And so that leads me to my third point that I'm very briefly going to make, which is the importance of comparison. We have recently started a project in Vienna which sets out to compare the different post-Roman cultures, the West, Byzantium, and the Islamic world, as to their different visions of community, discourses of identity, and of difference. And found that actually a lot of research still needs to be done there. A very important topic, though, because it seems to have consequences unto this day. Nations have a different history, even in the 20th century, in the Islamic world and in Europe. But of course, we shouldn't overemphasize this difference, because if you look at it closely, there's always an interesting balance between factors of universal religion, empire, and particular ethnic identity, which really has to be studied. It helps to understand the present. So in that sense, the past does have a future, which was this morning's topic. And perhaps I can add one final observation, which I think is very important. We as humanities should not create the impression that we have all the answers, that we know such a lot about history, and you need just ask us, we're going to tell you. I think the natural sciences are very successful in creating the impression in the public how much research still needs to be done, how much research is still necessary to achieve this or that goal, or simply to understand this and that process better. I think we as humanities should also underline how much research is still necessary to understand how societies work, how they hold together, how they develop, how they change. And that is a message that I think should go out specifically to all the young people watching out there. There's going to be a lot of work still to do for you. So thank you.